Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
It's been a long road from being undrafted out of high school. It's been a long journey, man, and a lot left to learn. I know there's a lot left to get done, and there's a lot more to do.
There's a changeup to get him swinging. Nasty stuff as Manoah strikes out Odor. Swing and a miss. Judge down to a knee with the force of that swing. And he got him. Look at that swing. How late Judge was. And Manoah strikes out Judge.
What is really going to stick with you for years after this outing?
Hopefully everything. You know, I just want to take it all in and want to hug my whole family. And I think that's what I'm going to enjoy the most is how many people came out here to see me. I think that's what I'll remember the most.
Welcome to Spin Rate, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. Welcome to Spin Rate. This is the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and yes, we are here talking about your Toronto Blue Jays. It is an exciting, even a momentous day in Blue Jays history. Ordinarily, we record this show on Wednesday nights, but the weather didn't play along. So we decided to record on Thursday night so that we could recap Alek Manoah's first start in the big leagues, and it was a spectacular one against the New York Yankees at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, under the sun, in front of no one but his very enthusiastic family. It was a great day for the Blue Jays. It was a great game, first front half of a doubleheader. Unfortunately, they dropped the doubleheader when I'm recording this. But still, good vibes, good energy. Really exciting time for the Blue Jays to see one of their top pitching prospects come to the big leagues and just shove. So before we get into the show, I want to do the housekeeping part, which is make sure you go to theathletic.com/spinrate. Subscribe to The Athletics. You can read everything that my co-host Caitlin McGrath writes about your Toronto Blue Jays. I'm sure you'll want to read what she has written about Alek Manoah, his debut, the doubleheader in the Bronx. You want to read everything that Ken Rosenthal writes. You want to read everything that that all of the amazing baseball writers, you know, Saris, writing about all the gunk they're putting on the ball, the cheating, which may be potentially having a bit of a moment, maybe coming to a head a little bit here in baseball. Some interesting news, some interesting developments this week across the league in St. Louis in particular. Gio Gallego was asked to change his hat. God only knows what's coming next. So subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/spinrate. You can also subscribe to this show. You do not have to be a subscriber to The Athletic to listen to this show. I think you should. That way you can keep up. You can know what we're talking about. You can be as informed, and probably more so than me. Not Caitlin, but me. You want to go to wherever it is you get your podcasts. If you get them on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Overcast, on Stitcher, wherever. Podbean. I don't know if that's a thing anymore. Subscribe to the show. Hit us with a rating. Hit us with a like. Hit us with a 5 out of 5. Tell the people why you like the show. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to the algorithm, which is probably more important than me. They're always more important than us. But we are going to talk today almost exclusively about Alek Manoah. And it is my pleasure that we got to do it with Andrew Zuber, my friend and yours, the Zubes, the co-host of Sportsfeld. He is one of the geniuses behind Wrestling Brain on Twitch. And it's always fun to talk about the Zoobs and really keep real fresh. We just kind of hopped on pretty much right after the game was over. Excited to talk about Alek Manoah. So I would say, with no further ado, I hope that you enjoy this week's edition of Spin Rate. All right, as previously mentioned, it is my pleasure at this time to be joined on Spin Rate by none other than the co-host of Sportsfeld. You know him from online. You know him as a frequent guest friend of this show in every iteration. He's my friend. He's your friend. His name is Andrew Zuber. Mr. Zuber, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
What a great time to be here. We're all absolutely buzzing off the Alek Manoah fumes. Let's get after it.
The vibes are good. The vibes are strong right now. The Teoscar Hernandez vibe check could not could not get a higher score, as that's really what we hear. We pushed this back by a day to record thanks to the rainout. We wanted to talk about Alek Manoah. It was only a 7-inning game, but that meant that he pitched in like 86% of the game. A great first start. Everything about this Alek Manoah start was not everything, but which we'll get into, but every aesthetic thing about it was perfect. It's a nice day. He looked like $1 million. His mom was like a full 3-inning sideshow all to herself, and it was incredible. Let me just ask you, like, what was your impressions of this amazing start and this great day?
As good as could possibly have dreamed for. It was like everything you said, it sort of all fell into place of like that. Maybe it would have been a little bit more raucous if it was a night, if it was a single game at night at Yankee Stadium. Maybe it would have been a little bit more crowd. Basically, there was nobody there except from his family, because a doubleheader at limited capacity, on a colder day, it was very, very nice the last couple of days. So I think a lot of those things played into his favor, especially the 7-inning thing, because he goes 6 and you're like, oh man, he basically threw an 8-inning, basically threw 8. Absolutely perfect. Vibes off the charts. Like, people call it mound presence. He absolutely has that. He's enormous, which is perfect. There's so many things to pick apart from that, like the dichotomy of him wearing number 6, that the next guy to wear 6 is the largest possible person after Stroman. It's so subtly good. Listen, absolutely loving it. Couldn't have possibly dreamed. I had two people, this rarely happens to me, I had two people when I had uncovered that he was listed on the CBS Sports like probable starters well ahead of time. Two people came in and were like arguing with this person in my mentions. They were like, he's going to be terrible. It's a terrible spot. He's going to get shelled by the Yankees. They could not have possibly been more wrong. And it was great to have that sort of happen. Wildest dreams. Three hits? And like two of them were absolute two hits. And two both, hits, of, them
both
were
of them were dog shit. They were both dog shit flares.
Walked a leadoff hitter. I mean, listen, the stuff plays, I think, especially as it went along. I think the first inning, he was maybe a little bit squirrely. He was sort of all over the place. It didn't look like he actually threw a real strike until strike 3 to Judge in the first at bat. But then, like, man, that secondary stuff plays. Holy smokes. Like, the changeup looked ridiculous. Some of the first pitch sliders, like, oh, the whole piece. Beautiful.
I think I'm glad that you went there. I don't want to depart too far from the vibes, from the memification of his mom, who was just losing her shit, like absolutely beside herself the entire time, screaming, got the phone going, got the sunglasses, but you could see she's just like feeling every feeling that there is. And it was delightful. I know Lindsay Adler, who covers obviously the Yankees for The Athletic, she had a shot of, she was in the press box and you could hear them. There's 40 of them, 40 people in the Manoah clan, just shrieking and hooting and hollering away. And a great time, an absolute great time. He pitched so well, like you said. He walked, he walked 2, gave up 2 hits and 7 strikeouts. It was great because it was at Yankee Stadium, and I know that like Buck and Dan and the crew made it a lot about it, especially his grandmother was a big Yankees fan. It's Yankee Stadium, which is Yankee Stadium is Yankee Stadium. Like, that's just the place to do that. The team on the other side of the field is wearing the pinstripes. It's perfect. Now, the Yankees lineup is dog shit. Like, that is there. Horrible. That is a ghost of the real Yankees lineup that at some point you'd think you would see. I mean, we're talking, there's no Voit, no Stanton. LeMahieu is off to a rough patch. Gary Sanchez not in the lineup in the first game of the doubleheader. Sucks anyways. Like, that was good eating for a guy like Alek Manoah, in that lineup being in the state that it was in. But at the same time, still sees Yankees on the scorecard, right? But that was a pretty nice landing spot if you're gonna drop a guy in. The stuff was really, really impressive. A lot of people are going to think about, I hope, are going to think back to, speaking of the aesthetic, the 2 back-to-back pitches to Aaron Judge were the one where he threw the fastball straight past him and Judge like fell flat on his face effectively. I saw there was like a bend the knee meme going around where he's down on one knee, he's got his hand on the ground. And then the next one where he threw the fastball, like, so it was like Judge tried to pick it out of Reese McGuire's glove with his bat when it had already gone past. Delightful. The changeup was the real surprise, a really nice surprise, I think. That was the offering that came in as maybe iffy. And he threw some great ones. The one he used to strike out Rougned Odor in the first inning was amazing. Beautiful changeup. Tons of arm side run. Odor overmatched. A really great pitch. Again, not to belabor the point about the Yankees being dog shit, but they had Rougned Odor in their lineup hitting second because who the hell else is going to do it?
A lot of people say that Rougned Odor looks different without the beard. And I think he looks exactly the same. Absolutely terrible. Listen, they're not the bosses, Yankees. Absolutely. But another thing that sort of popped into my head watching this game was like, yeah, the Yankees lineup is dog shit. And obviously it's not going to be this the entire season. They're going to have Stanton back. They're going to have important guys up. I don't know that LeMahieu is going to be terrible the whole year, but oof, imagine they had signed LeMahieu instead of Semien right now. It would have been, that would be trouble. But another part of that is like, there really is no big bad wolf team. And I said this before on this podcast, but like, other than the last week where they like, you know, grains of sand through their fist against Boston and Tampa, there is no, like, the Yankees are the only other team that you're really, really talking about when you're talking about the upper crust that they're super, super worried about. And, you know, they pissed away those games last week. They weren't overmatched in any way. So to me, I think seeing this last week, even though they lost six of those games, they were competitive in every game and they just sort of were missing one or two small things. I think they're about to have a huge injection. And we talk about the vibes. I think the vibes are about to be through the roof here for a little bit. If Manoah is good, if George Springer does anything but take BP, I've never seen anybody have more BP footage every day. Every day we get footage of George Springer, like laughing his ass off, like time of his life.
All smiles. He's trying to match the Teoscar Hernandez vibe perspective. He's like, I can bring the vibes just as hard. But Rogers is like, we got to get our money's worth, man. We're paying this guy $150 million bucks. We're going to get content out of him. We're going to just fill the airwaves with George Springer highlights.
They should at least be selling whatever t-shirt he takes back. Practice in. Let's get some merch off the shelves here. That's the only time I ever see him. Charlie did say, other than changing directions, he's doing fine. So all good. All good on that end.
Who, and an outfielder, a base runner, changing directions? Who needs it? Now, so much to celebrate. It was a great start. It was a great thing to watch. The thing I'm going to say was, it's going to sound a little bit like me doubling down on something that I said on Twitter like a week and a half ago. That I took, I didn't say I took heat. People disagreed, which is fine. And very few people called me an idiot, which is what there were the highlights of the game against, I guess it's not Pawtucket anymore. It's the Worcester Red Sox.
Sure.
When Manoah struck out like 100 of them and he was throwing the slider and his slider in from where I was from the camera angle, the slider was up a lot. It wasn't down in the zone. It wasn't buried. When he was throwing it to lefties, it wasn't down on the back foot. It was kind of like under the hands, which isn't the worst place to be, but it was still like in the upper half of the zone. So that was, I made an observation. I was like, look, big leaguers aren't gonna miss these like this. Alec Manoah threw, what did he throw? 12? He threw 26 sliders today. He got two swing and misses. Two on 26. Because the slider wasn't great. It wasn't used in a way that I would consider a slider to be used, and the way that we saw it being used as like a real strikeout weapon, as a strike three, throwing it past guys. He threw a lot of sliders that I think were, to be fair, and if we're all being honest and just trying to like evaluate it for what it was, they were bad. A lot of them were like way up in the zone. He got a couple good calls where I know the pitching ninja clipped one where it was like, oh, we paint with a slider. And I was like, man, that slider is like up and on the outside corner. Like, that's not exactly where you'd want to throw it. Now, he got away with one to Judge that in Judge's last at bat where he just missed it and it flew it to center field. Like, I wouldn't want to be living there. If I'm anybody, Alec Manoah included. That said, he can get away with it because he throws two really, really good fastballs and he fills the zone, right? He wasn't walking anybody. So he's got the two fastballs. He's got the two seamer that had a nice bit of arm side run that's coming in on the righties. He can throw that high spin four seamer that they couldn't touch. The Judge looked like an idiot on that. He threw past a lot of folks. And when the changeup, which he got way more, he only threw, I think, well, he got seven, he threw it 13 times, got three swing and misses. We got more swing and misses with the changeup. And the other thing I'll say is the slider, he got the two swing and misses he got were when he needed them. They were with two strikes and they were on really good pitches that were down. The one, I think, I can't remember, might have been Higashioka, was like, it was in the dirt. It was like in the other batter's box. Like, those are good pitches. He needs to do that more, unless he's really using that slider as like a kind of get me over sort of like steal a strike pitch, which is a little bit, that's living dangerously, but when when you combine it with all the other stuff and you combine it with the ability to throw strikes, that's when the stuff plays resonates, because it's all part of the package. Individually, in isolation, those pitches aren't great, but he can get away with it because he's got so much else to offer, I think. And there's no reason to not be excited. I'm just going to not throw cold water on it, but make my observation because I'm dug in, frankly.
No, I think that's reasonable. And listen, you know, we all know it's not always going to be six scoreless, effortlessly carving up, you know, a lineup that has Rougned Odor hitting second in it. There's going to be bumps in the road. You know, Nate Pearson's path is one that you don't have to look very far to see a guy who you sort of saw a similar level of hype in. And I even remember, you know, last year in the little peak we did have, it was the not just the 100 miles an hour, it was the fact that he was throwing sliders and changeups that had really, really drooling. And it's sort of a similar package here, obviously toned down a little bit, but in another big fella. It's exciting. It's room to dream because, you know, I think it pairs nicely with how low the expectations have gotten for some of those rotation spots, right? That the Anthony Kay grab bag could be anybody's slot, and the Ross Stripling, every single time he knows he's one run away from getting cut out of the rotation, getting out of the inning somehow. That's you know, that's 40% of your rotation, and then you're really, really banking on mm-hmm. Ray and Ryu, and you know Matt's not having a blow up inning. So they really do need anything at all from those slots, and I think that's what makes it, at least for me, a softer landing zone for Manoah. Like I do expect, obviously, there to be bumps, and there's going to be games where he gets hit, and that slider, for example, gets jumped on. But I think there's you know, we don't know what the ceiling is, and there's sort of that fun of like, it's something to watch every time out versus like, man, I hope Ross Stripling doesn't like get absolutely rocked around the world tonight, or hope it's not a ton of Trent Thornton, or like all those sort of things. There's some room here for some real optimism. And yeah, I was really, I'm with you. I was really taken back by the changeup. I thought he did a masterful job with, and the two seam fastball, the way he mixed that with off his changeup and off his other fastball, the high spin four seamer, really, really mesmerizing. And just like, man, the two seam was moving really, really cool.
It's almost reminding me of like old Josh Johnson, the old Josh Johnson, like diamond tipped bore, just like drilling in. We'll be right back with more spin rate. But first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The comparison to Pearson is interesting because they both have great stuff. Pearson's stuff is ridiculous, right? And he throws even harder. But the fact that when Pearson has been in the big leagues at a variety of times, other than like the playoff appearance against the Rays and most of that start against Washington, he can't throw strikes. And then when he can't throw strikes, it doesn't matter how beautiful his slider is or how well he buries it in the dirt when he needs to. There, if he's behind in the count all the time, then he ends up just kind of searching for the strike zone, where Manoah wasn't doing that today. And it'll be interesting. Like you said, it's not always going to be perfect. Like any pitcher, there'll be days when it's not there. There'll be days when he doesn't have his best fastball and when he can't locate. But when he can locate that fastball, when he can command, what do they say? Like all four quadrants of the strike zone, he's going to carve people up. He's going to break their bats. He's going to break their spirits. And then it doesn't matter, but that's something that he can then add and become even better, right? If he can do that, get that tunneling effect where it's like all the pitches are kind of coming through and they all sort of go like reep in their own different ways and at their own different speeds, he could be a true monster. And he's just like the easiest guy to root for as well. Like we talked about, like I've been joking about it. I talked about it on here with Caitlin before about like just that big donkey dick, like just big and completely untroubled, like a completely untroubled individual who's just like, yeah, man. He says, man, like once a sentence and it's beautiful. And he's just out there having the time of his life. And I hope it continues because it sure the hell, it sure beats the Nate Pearson, like talking to himself and like stomping up and down the dugout because he's not sure if this is going to be his last start in the big leagues. It's really when it's going again, not when it's going good, it's easy, but he makes it look easy and makes it look fun, which is nice to have.
Yeah, he definitely has a mound presence that sort of is a real thing. And I think sort of going through the rotation, it is funny. It is like a really different collection of guys that they all sort of go about their work very different way. Like, you know, Ryu is like watching a Bob Ross painting, sort of. It's just like it's always in control. It's like everything is going exactly to plan, and he's able to, if it's not, he's able to like create a new plan on the fly, and it's never stressed. You're never really worried. Steven Matz always looks like he's like, he has a suitcase packed. Like he looks like he's like one thing away from just being like, and we never saw Steven Matz again. Like and then Manoah's like the way he like, and then again, this is, we're curating vibes here, and we're casting from a place we're not, obviously not able to be in the clubhouse and in dugout, but like he shows up with the blue tinted sunglasses. Like he just really exudes. He really oozes that, like that macho, like I'm really good at this. And like, I'm huge and I throw smoke, like this rocks to be me.
He's so big. I found a couple things. I found it really interesting that the word tarp has been in the kind of lexicon this week because Alec Manoah's jersey, you could also use to cover your pool at any time if need be. But the other thing is I was a little disappointed because he had all the buttons on his jersey done up. I was expecting him to come out with like at least two undone, like full swagger, like unbelievable amounts, the chains and all that stuff. But like, again, just the smiles, the size, like 8 7/8 hat that he's got rocking on there. It's a lot of fun. It is an interesting mix. It was really interesting to see guys like Marcus Stroman pitch today. Marcus Stroman had time between his start ending to hop online and be like, and shout out Alec Manoah, a guy that they apparently spent some time together and worked together and good for Manoah. But to the bigger Blue Jays picture, that obviously there's no downside to him pitching well. Like, oh no, we have too many good pitchers. But like, all it does is start to take, you know, push guys further down the line. Now you don't, like you said, you're not worried about, you know, what role Ross Stripling can fit in. Now it's kind of a patchwork piece. Is he going to take starts? Is he going to be a long man? You know, who's the odd man out in terms of pitching? Again, as you've seen, as you alluded to, the weekend series against Tampa Bay and the previous series against Boston, where the bullpen was really overtaxed and really looking rough, and now they lost David Phelps for the year. So it's like they're in a rough spot. So anything else they can get in their rotation that can only impact and positively impact that bullpen, which I think another guy we could talk about who's got his own set of vibes is Jordan Romano, who's now seems like the ninth inning guy for the moment. And he looks ridiculous recently. So good.
Yeah. Just before we move on I just wanted to say but the one disappointment today was like that we got robbed of the Manoah Kirk battery first time out. That would have been the first time those two guys are meeting on the mound, would have been a special photo. It's just like absolute giant and the shortest guy. And they're both like just big fellas, like talking, pitching. That's what I get out of bed for. But yeah.
And then you get Rowdy running over there from first base.
And some of the picks today, they're just pelting Rowdy's feet. Brutal throws today. But anyway, to Romano's point, yeah, absolutely. And like really, he sort of reminds me of sometimes, maybe your audience will understand it as well. It's like you'll see a photo of a wrestler in real life and you'll be like, oh yeah, a huge part of his job is like believably looking crazy, right? I get that from Jordan Romano. It's like, I guess just like when he, in his idea, us, it's like we go to work, we sit at our desk and type and fill in spreadsheets. His idea of go to work is like, all right, now I have to look crazy for 3.5 hours. And I love it. Listen, that's late reliever stuff. Big crazy beard, talking to yourself, bending low, you know,
the wiggle he's got going these days, where he's like side to side, pure hips.
Dan likes to mention that he gets up and starts walking around in like the second inning, absolutely into it. As long as he's staying in the bullpen, he's the guy probably that I trust most, only because I don't know who the rest of the guys are except for Dolis, who I would like to never watch again. what a horror show. I knew it wasn't gonna, when it was one out in the sixth and they showed that Dolis was warming up, I was like, you can't do this to us. You can't turn the ninth over to Dolis. But it was, you know, in case.
I'm sure that Teoscar Hernandez, the executive in charge of vibes, came over and was like, this isn't going to work for us right now. You need to do anything else other than this.
Who led the water bottle in the interview brigade? Of course, it was Teoscar.
Mr. Seeds himself. Tyler Chatwood. I hope that Tyler Chatwood isn't overly colored by that one rough outing. I think he's been great, throwing a lot of strikes. But that's the biggest thing for Jordan Romano, that everybody, you know, Caitlin and I talked about at the beginning of the season. Caitlin sort of predicted, like, hey, maybe he could be a guy that could, you know, be the closer, get some appearances at the end of the games, and he's absolutely done that. And for him, the biggest thing, and it's something that's carried over from last year, is that he's throwing strikes too. He throws 98, now he's up to 99 and 100 sometimes, but throwing strikes, and even today again. So there maybe the difference, kind of to counter to what I was saying earlier about Manoah's slider, is that Romano's slider, he doesn't tend to like bury it quite as much, and he can throw it for a strike, but it's 90, right? Like, his slider is 90 miles an hour. You can get away with a lot more when your slider is 90 as compared to 82, 83, 84, which you see from Manoah. But Romano's been great, and definitely a guy that when I see him coming in, I'm like, okay, I'm good with this. Throwing 99 is like the ultimate eraser. Like, nothing else matters when you can pump it in there at that speed.
Yeah. Chatwood does worry me, only because, like, to your point, is like, not about getting so much colored with the last appearance where he's seen to play a lot of loose control, but it's like, there's a not too distant history of, like, once the control is gone, it's gone. And I thought he really, like, in his most recent appearance, I think he got a double play ball after a walk, and it was like, oof, that was the personification of when you tweet, like, I'm not having a meltdown. It was like the definitely, like, definitely wasn't a meltdown and happening by Tyler Chatwood tonight, getting a hard hit double play ball. But yeah, listen, I mean, they're in dire straits back there. They've had Phelps and Merriweather and Kirby Yates, who doesn't exist. They've had a bunch of stuff happen, and you know, I'm not smart enough to know if that's sort of a consequence of player usage, or if that is just because they haven't had the rotation that they have wanted, or if that's just, you know, shit luck. Life happens that way, and that's baseball. But it has been extremely disheartening. I don't know that anybody believed when they were the best bullpen in the league through the first month, or when they were like one of the best team ERAs. I don't think anybody truly believed that was like a reflection of reality, but you know, it sucks when your bullpen loses games, because the big takeaway for me, especially if you want to look at the entire first, 50-ish games in here, has been they've been in basically every game. I don't remember them really being blown out to any point where you're like, they never come back from this. They've had games where you're fine to stop watching, but they're pretty much in everything, especially with the way that they hit.
Well, those couple of games against Tampa Bay in particular, where they were tight games, and then like a last, you know, late inning collapse, or the late inning comeback, and then, you know, Tampa scored, what, 7 runs in like the 11th inning or something obnoxious like that. Another good thing, this is where I am right now. There's a lot of talk and attention this week about cheating, about guys, pitchers loading up the ball. John Means of the Orioles is apparently like among the most flagrant I watched some very like slow mo. Oh, there you can see he goes. He's loading up, going to the glove, loading up, doing this. Alec Manoah was going to his mouth a lot, going to the mouth, and then which, so I'm like, sweet, he's not loading up. He's not about to lick a bunch of super glue and whatever that goofy stuff that Eno and I talked about to load up the ball. So good to see. I've decided in my head that Tampa Bay, they all cheat.
Of course. That we knew.
It's just a matter of like figuring out how they do it. Because they were complaining about, this is a bit of a tangent, but they were complaining because Tyler Chatwood started again last night ahead of his start. There was a lot of like, I don't know what's up with the Blue Jays. They know what's coming. It's like, you cheat. You're the Rays.
Make baseball worse by having success.
In every way, they make baseball worse. Even though the team is good is kind of, I don't know. They make baseball worse. I'm not here to carry water for the Rays. Trust me.
Every franchise wishes that they were the Rays. Is the sickening truth of all these front office guys. They wish that they were could be seen in that vein by their peers.
Which is to say that when things go wrong, nobody cares. Nobody asks. That's right. That's the way to be.
At least it was cheap.
At least we dumped that salary. We're better off. I should correct myself. I was talking on Sunday show with Caitlin about Manuel Margot and Tommy Pham. So they did not actually trade Manuel Margot for Tommy Pham. They traded Manuel Margot for Emilio Pagan.
That's right.
Reliever, the guy that wore used to wear the big helmet because he got hit with the comebacker, the great kazoo helmet. So apologies from the errors and corrections department that no one reminded me because they were all like, he's just rambling and ranting about the Rays. So everyone's like, yeah, fuck the Rays. But so I don't know. Anything else? Are there any other big takeaways? So the Blue Jays, as you and I are talking here, the Blue Jays are still embroiled in a big series again, or in the second game of the doubleheader against the Yankees. It does not appear that Robbie Ray was exactly his sharpest, but I guess, so here we are, Zoobs, with Alek Manoah maybe presumably here to stay or here to get another couple starts. How do you feel about the Blue Jays here now, just about 2 months into the season, looking ahead to the summer? How do you feel about the team compared to when last we spoke, for example?
I think they're about where I expected them to be. The six-game losing streak sort of knocks the record down back a little bit below, I think, the true talent level. I think when they were, you know, 6 games over .500, it was like this felt right. It felt like it was fair. Like they hadn't stolen money they didn't deserve. They sort of had pitched well. I think we sort of still know what the issues are. I think the good thing for me is the issues seem really apparent. It's like you could always use more pitching depth. You could always use more bullpen stability. And right now, when Biggio being out, for example, for all the shortcomings we talked about with Biggio last time, when he's not in the lineup, you're like, ooh, this is a lot of Jonathan Davis. This is a lot of Santiago Espinal. This is a lot of the catcher slot. Like you see pretty quickly how much 7, 8, 9 can fall off the table here. Gurriel is starting to heat up a little bit, but I think, you know, a bench bat in the third baseman is not a crazy lift to do. I do think Manoah gives them a big shot of confidence, and that will help quite a bit. I think they're in a good spot. I think they're about to sort of, I talked about this with Jake. I think some fuck you is about to come out, if that makes sense. I think they're about to like go from, oh, that's a fun young team to follow, to be like, man, I'm sick of hearing about the Blue Jays. I think we might get some of that. And I think, you know, how could you not be over the moon about Vladdy for things like, for example, like he's been truly unbelievable, not even unbelievable. He's been believable every day, is the brilliance of it. He's been night in, night out, like exactly what you want. So I'm in a really optimistic place with it. I wanted to ask you, because people ask me this week on Sportsfeld. I am, you know, for all my caustic wit and sarcasm, I'm generally an optimist when I'm around things and generally think most things are not a huge deal that get blown up into things. What is your assessment of Charlie Montoyo for the team at this point, and Charlie Montoyo for the team, say, going forward in the future for where they want to get?
The Blue Jays in their truest form need someone to write the names down in the right order and then fuck off. Right. And to your point, there's some of this fuck you kind of swagger is going to come out of this team. When George Springer is in the lineup every day for good, that is a ball team. That's a team that's going to walk into almost every stadium in the American League and be like, we're going to win tonight. And if we have Ryu going, we think we're going to win tonight. And if we got Robbie Ray going, we feel like we're going to win tonight. If we have that enormous, goofy, grinning monkey going, we're going to win tonight, right? Like, and if Steven Matz is going, we're going to score some runs for him tonight, and then we're going to win. And there's not a lot of people that's going to be able to stop them, right? They can score a ton of runs. And as soon as you add in George Springer into that mix, you start taking at-bats away from any number of those other guys. If it is even Biggio, Rowdy, Santiago Espinal, whatever, you start having to like have those guys fight for those leftover spots. So that team kind of runs itself. Montoyo does things, again, for all of it, the talk of him being coming from the Rays and being, you know, thinking outside of the box for him is like, I'm going to try extra hard to give away an out here by having guys bunt with two strikes, which is like, okay, so Santiago Espinal is not probably not a big league caliber hitter. Reese McGuire is not a big league caliber hitter. Danny Jansen has yet to prove himself over like a bigger than a 30 game sample that he's a big league caliber hitter. So I understand you are trying to avoid the worst case scenario by having any of them hit into a double play in a given moment by taking the bat out of their hands and asking them to bunt. So that stuff's like stupid and kind of irritating. But like, I don't think it's a deal breaker. Like if the Blue Jays season comes down to that, it means that a lot of the other things haven't really gone the way they should have gone. Bullpen management, I've said this before, and I think I might have said it even just last week. Like, I'm willing to give him as much credit for when the bullpen is good as blame when the bullpen is bad, which is like, it's hard when guys aren't throwing strikes. It's hard to be bad when everybody comes in and mows everybody down. When Jordan Romano comes in and throwing 99 and then throws a 90 mile an hour slider that the guy swings through and everything else is dotted to the corner of the strike zone. Well, yeah, the manager was smart for going like, hey, go in and do that. Like he doesn't deserve a lot of credit for that, but he also doesn't deserve a lot of blame when Tyler Chatwood, who's been one of his most reliable guys, comes in and then just walks the ballpark, right? Unless you want to blame him for taking him out too early, even though he's cooked and looks like trash and just like, you know, just go get him tomorrow. As long as the players are able to like get up and he does his rah-rah stuff in the exact right amount, as long as it's not too much or too little, which is whatever that is. So I don't know that he's the wrong guy or the right guy. I just think if the players will play for him, then it's probably fine. I think that's really as like deeply as I think about it. And as long as he doesn't screw up the order too much, which again, when guys are hitting better, you know, that stuff will sort itself out. You know, Bo Bichette is a streaky hitter. So he's got two home runs already here today on Thursday. Maybe is he better as a three hitter and Vlad is two? Maybe, because then Bo's going to run into one when Vlad is on base 50% of the time, as opposed to Vlad coming up with two outs, you know, often, not always, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's like the most splitting of hairs, right? And to say Charlie Montoya, again, thinking outside of the box, he's still going to say some shit like, we got to put our best run producers in a position to make a difference. So I don't know.
Yeah. I think we lay on about the same side of, you know, the fact that he says he's happy that they compete when they blow games to the Rays, that's just who Charlie is. I sort of have accepted as like he's always going to try to say absolutely nothing. That's going to be number one MO is say nothing of any value. And number two, he's always going to be a guy that like tries to dial it. Any sort of excitement in either way is always going to try to get it back to like a zero. So things that are going very wrong, he'll be like, yeah, you know, but it's fine that we're battling and didn't give up. And then if things going very right, he'll sort of try to calm that down as well. Like, yeah, we're a good team. We give credit to the opponents.
And I've talked about this a lot with different people we've had on here. I remember speaking of it with Craig Goldstein on a previous episode. And I think that it's the thing that we saw with today with Manoah even was like, he had almost all his pitches going really well, right? When his changeup's going like that, that's when he's like special. Right. If his changeup is ordinary, if they don't have to worry about it, if they can discount it or they can tee off on it because it's kind of sitting in the zone. But that the idea of grinding and the idea of being able to like mentally push through when you're feeling a little fatigued, when you're not don't have your best stuff, that's a big part of baseball. And that's the thing I think that right now has eluded Nate Pearson in that like if he's not at his best, if everything isn't clicking and he's not hitting on all cylinders, he's a mess. Right, which is like it's easy to pitch when you can when everything's working and you feel like a million bucks, but to win at the big league level and maybe if that's the insight that Charlie can bring and that's the thing that he can say that they can hear, which is like it's a long season. You got to grind through this stuff and you got to be able to go out and maybe like Robbie Ray tonight or Steven Matz a couple of his other starts, not the last one against the Yankees, but the previous start where he like struggled. Right. And it's like that's what being a big leaguer is as a pitcher in particular, where it's like you got to get up there and you got to see like I'm going to get 15 outs and I'm going to do it by the skin of my teeth. But if he can imbue the young players with that idea and let them get through with that and realize that, you know, if you go for three, you can still make a great play in the field. You might be, you know, Rowdy Tellez can't hit at all this year, but he's still doing whatever he can. The broadcast, they've done a really good job of like, highlighting parts of Rowdy Tellez that make me really want to cheer for him. And like, there was the thing where he was showing Vlad how to play first base, basically. Like drawing a circle with his foot and being like, anything outside of that, you got to try scoop and blah, 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 blah. And then again today, so Rowdy doesn't not bringing his bad plate appearances into the field. Like those things are important and it sounds stupid. And like if you told 2009 Drew that I was like, the little things matter and like, you know, you can work hard and overcome, I would come through the screen and slap you. But it does matter. So if Charlie can help those guys see those things in times when they don't want to or aren't able to, then he's the right guy. If not, then whatever. More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
But let me ask you one other thing too. Charlie says nothing. I don't know if you've been following this Joe Girardi thing where Joe Girardi is just like telling the media, like, I'm not going to tell you stuff anymore. We're not going to tell you why Bryce Harper is out because it's a competitive disadvantage. Do you think that's in, like, does that piss you off? Does that make you, do you care? Like if when they're, I mean, I know that we see the Blue Jays are often accused of not being transparent when it comes to injuries and be like, oh, it's a bad shoulder. And next thing you know, it's like, he's on the aisle. Like, oh, we'll see what happens. Alejandro Kirk's day to day, and then he's on the injured list. Like, does that irritate you? Does it piss you off? I don't know. Do you value that kind of information from the team?
I don't know that I value the information, but there is sometimes like stuff will happen that I don't think makes any sense, and I don't know that it gets picked up and asked. Like, for I'll give you the example is Biggio is on the IL, and in between, basically, he had 2 days off with a neck injury. Then he pinch hit, and then the next day he was on the IL, right? Mm-hmm. So they lose, basically, they lose three retroactive IL days. And Gurriel didn't pinch hit that game because he was too hurt, but then played first the next day and didn't go on the IL. That sort of stuff fully like it confuses me as to like how is Gurriel not healthy enough to pinch hit and Biggio is, but less than 24 hours later, Biggio is so injured that he's on the IL and Gurriel isn't. There's been like a lot of, and not that I, you know, again, I think with the way the organization is run, I don't, you know, delude myself into thinking that Charlie was like demanding that that is how it goes. I think Charlie is told, you're not using this guy today and he has to figure it out. I think there's a big part of that. But yeah, there is some strange, it doesn't really piss me off because like they don't owe me anything. I do feel like I'm just a fan. I'm just a guy. They don't really owe me anything. And so it goes. But the injury stuff, like the Springer stuff is comical at this point. Like they're telling you that he's never felt better and that like well, then he should be, I don't know, like running or something. It's hard because, you know, we have heard only that, every single guy is not that hurt. And then suddenly Phelps is out for the year or what have you. So it's been frustrating, but I also understand to a degree that they haven't been dealt the easiest hand. And also like we want every injury diagnosed immediately when yeah. In reality, swelling has to go down, tests have to be run. Like
that's kind of where I am with this. I think especially the nature of these soft tissue injuries that are happening more and more in 2021, which everybody could see coming. There was a lot written about this all winter long. Like what is baseball going to do with all these guys that are hurt? And now we're seeing, it's like everyone's hurt all the time. And the soft tissue injuries are like, they can be difficult to diagnose, I think. And I think that I get the sense that the baseball culture is changing a little bit where it's like, you got to go out there and play. And you got to do what you got to do. And you got to get out there and play every day. You're earning a paycheck. So you earn it on the field. And the resentment, the stuff that I remember Dirk Hayhurst wrote about getting shit from veterans because he was sitting on the IL, getting paid and like sucking up big league check. And they were all resentful that he was just sort of like there loitering. I'd like to hope that's changing a little bit and that there's not the same stigma, like go out there and play no matter what. But it can be frustrating again when you just don't know, when as a fan you're like, hey, why is this going on? Especially because we're also quick to like play back, you know, armchair manager and pulling the strings and how could you not do this? And the impulse, you know, the old impulse to manage every game like it's game seven of the World Series, in a season like 2021 is doubly unlikely, just because there are so many things that they're trying to manage. And I mean, look how many times Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is playing, is getting time at DH, I think is a little bit, maybe a little bit surprising. But I think if Rowdy was hitting, it would maybe, I think that Vlad would play first more. Like, I think they're just trying to do anything to get Rowdy comfortable enough to be a threat, because, you know, as I said, I'm kind of rooting for him, and his bat has a potential to like really offer a lot in the Blue Jays lineup that I think that not that they need a lot of help scoring runs, but it would even make it that much scarier and that much longer.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I think Randall Grichuk is a great example of that. It's like, you hear a lot of people being like, man, Grichuk's having a nice year. It's like, he's pretty much been the same guy he's always been. And he's just the sixth most important hitter now. Mm-hmm. And so everything he does, you're like, oh man, that helped. Versus like, you know, in the last 2 years, there's been a lot of like, he's hitting fourth, or he has to carry them because Vlad is struggling. Like, you look at that change in expectation, and I think Rowdy is a great example of this. And it sort of has allowed Gurriel to go through his struggles and find himself and be a contributor. They do have that depth, especially again, if they're going to have Springer, they have the chance to have some depth where guys like Rowdy and Gurriel and even Grichuk are going to be allowed to go through the spells where they don't look great. And still find ways to contribute. With Grichuk, it's the ability to play the outfield competently to well. With you know, Rowdy is, as you said, he's like teaching and he's picking up, you know, he's scooping things at first. And Gurriel has somehow continued to pick up outfield assists, even though he's their fifth option, I think, defensively outfield wise. There's stuff. There's at least stuff. So it feels good. Yeah. Again, overall, I think they're in a really good spot. I think they're in a fun spot as well, where you're allowed to. It's easy to think of transactions that would help, and there's a wide breadth of players that they could try to add. It's exciting. I'm excited. It's the best I've felt about the team in 5 years.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. I think you made a great point about Randall Grichuk too, which is like, he is who he is, and he's not he is heading for, maybe like he did it last year too. He's hitting for a bit of a higher average, so it kind of looks better. Where it's like, oh, look at him, he's kind of slapping the other way, but it's like he's probably not going to hit as many home runs as he used to. Which is like, is that a worthwhile trade off? It could be. It looks a little bit better, but I love him. You know, his offensive profile as a competent, not spectacular center fielder. I've got all kinds of time for that. Him playing right field every day. I don't know. And that's where same thing with Espinal, where kind of bringing this conversation full circle, some of I swear there were like three balls hit in the infield today, and two of them had terrible throws coming back over to Rowdy, and he had to make a couple of nice plays. So is it, you know, Espinal can't hit, but like, man, it's nice having a competent infielder. Same thing with the outfield. It's like, that's where it gets tough. Okay. So when George Springer is back, I'll ask you this. This will be our last question, our last part of the thing. If when George Springer is back, what's your ideal Blue Jays outfield? If it's like, okay, the Blue Jays are heading in to Tampa, they really need to win this series. George Springer is healthy. He's playing the outfield every day. What does your Blue Jays outfield look like?
I think it's got to be Springer and Teoscar as your first two. Listen, Teoscar is sneaky, the most important guy. That's a drum I've tried to beat, and then his return sneakily, he's the most important guy. Everybody's always in a good mood when he's around. I think he's got to be. He's always a really important piece of it. And then, you know, I think you have the luxury of saying, you get to see who's in a better groove between Grichuk and Gurriel. And before the season, I probably would have said Gurriel, but I think right now it's Grichuk. I just sort of think, total package, game to game, knowing what you're getting, you know, it always generally just makes a competent to good outfield plays, gets the ball in quickly when he gets it. I know Gurriel gets the showcase on the great arm, but that's because he is a terrible fielder. It's sort of like he's getting himself in a position where guys are like, oh, I can take two. That guy has no idea what he's doing out there. And maybe part of it's bait, but you know, you'll take the solid competence. Yeah. To me, it's Grichuk Hernandez and Springer. I think that's a gift. I think that's a lot of power. I think that's a lot of opportunity and a pretty well-rounded outfield. You know, you sort of have a lot of everything, as well as some speed, as well as some, you know, a little bit of defense, depending on, we have no idea what Springer's going to look like defensively, of course, but, mm-hmm. I think that, especially when you look at how not long ago it was when like Alan Hansen was rotating into right field,
Socrates Brito,
at least he's an outfielder. They had Joe Panik playing left field. It's a nice quick, that especially the outfield is a nice reminder of like how quickly this has turned around and how easy it is to be optimistic. Cause you really do have four options of you've mentioned with Espinal, you're probably not a major league hitter and Davis probably not a major league hitter. Four guys who are absolutely major league hitters, like no question, no doubt, guys who can get it done at the highest level. So it makes me very, very exciting.
It's going to be really interesting. I think it'll be tough because, it's definitely more art than science when it comes to it, especially because of the kind of hitter that Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is, that whether or not you are going to play him every day or whether you're going to move him to DH or have him come off the bench or whatever it might be, he's so streaky, right? Because he just swings at everything and he puts everything in play. So if he's hot, which is, again, his runs counter to what a lot of, you know, early statistical analysis would have suggested is a real thing, but it's like, you know, he is who he is, but when all those hits come in clusters, you want to kind of take advantage of those clusters. It's like betting, you know, in blackjack if you're able to count cards or anything, you know that, oh, there's a lot of tens left in the deck. It doesn't mean you're going to win the next hand, but like the odds are stacked in your favor. And if a guy like Gurriel who clusters all his hits together, well, you got to take advantage of that. So that might mean riding out the bad defense at the expense of the underwhelming or unspectacular competence of Randall Grichuk. So it'll be really interesting. It'll be interesting because I'm looking so much forward to the day where it's like George Springer, you just write an 8 next to his name and put him in the number 4 spot. And it's just kind of like, off we go. But those days will come.
I certainly hope so. Oh my goodness.
Let us put a plug in for the things that you do, Mr. Andrew Zuber. Where can the people find you? Where can they learn about the brain? And when can they listen to Sportsfeld?
Sportsfeld, at Sportsfeld. It's we're basically turning into a full-time Jays podcast. I can't talk about anything else anymore. We have a little bit of buds.
Leafs? Yeah,
a little bit of buds. We like of the first 40 minutes, we'll do 30 minutes flat on the Jays, and then we'll do 10 minutes on the buds probably right now. Sportsfeld, they come out Thursday mornings, and I do a show behind the Patreon wall for subscribers that comes out every Monday morning, which is just me basically talking to myself. And then I'll have a guest on about once a month to get some temperature. I basically go through every single game and just sort of give a game by game review. And as well, if you're into wrestling, Wrestling Brain Wednesday nights after AEW Dynamite, my friend Josh and I, it's on Twitch, twitch.tv/WrestlingBrain. People all over are saying Wrestling Brain. I'm not sure if you know that, but
a streamer say it.
Yes. Penelope Ford. She's a wrestler. They should see the Wrestling Brain. We do a post show after AEW Dynamite and we take calls on the air. It's absolute maniacs. It's hilarious. It's like if you gave this call that we're on, if you just gave the link out in public and we're like, all right, whoever wants to come on, that's what we do for wrestling. It's actually a hilarious community. We've had some great people be very generous and have some hilarious conversations. And it's been funny. People from like Texas, Oklahoma, Chicago, Vancouver. It's been really, really fun to see who calls in and you never really know when you put that link out into the ether. So we're having a tons of fun. But yeah, mainly Sportsfeld for this audience, probably Thursday mornings and Monday morning is your Blue Monday, which we'll see about, you know, if that becomes if we get a good playoff run, if that becomes a public thing, because I have a lot of fun doing it.
Awesome. Well, Mr. Zuber, thank you so much. As always, I hope you're well there in the region, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. It's always a pleasure to talk to everybody who's listening to this. As I probably said at the beginning, I don't know yet. I haven't recorded that part yet. Make sure you go to theathletic.com/spinrate, subscribe to The Athletic, subscribe to the show. His name is Andrew Zuber. My name is Drew Fairservice. Caitlin McGrath and I will talk to you on Sunday on the next edition of Spin.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.